Well met, and welcome to episode 81, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for July 27th, 2014. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and this week we are going to continue our two-month-long discussion of As You Like It with an overview of some of the productions that are available on video. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been checking out some of the filmed versions of As You Like It with varying levels of satisfaction. So let's take a look at them chronologically. The 1936 version has some interesting pieces of history connected to it, in many ways more interesting than the film itself. Number one, it was the first speaking version of As You Like It filmed. It was also the first filmed Shakespearean role by Laurence Olivier, who played Orlando, and the only time that he ever performed Shakespeare in a theatrical film for which he wasn't nominated for an Academy Award. The director, Paul Cisner, and his wife Elizabeth Bergner, who played Rosalind, were both Austrian Jews who had fled their native countries to escape persecution. For them, the concept of the Forest of Arden was less an idyllic pastoral setting and more of a metaphor for escape and flight. The film's treatment, or a screenplay outline, was written by J.M. Barrie, the author behind Peter Pan, and the film's editor was future great director David Lean of Lawrence of Arabia fame. As for the film itself, well, it's from the 30s, so it's pretty stagey and extremely edited down to just over an hour and a half. And the editing wasn't just for time. As the Hays production code was beginning strict enforcement in Hollywood, there's an interesting change in the dialogue. In the play, when Celia asks Rosalind if she's upset over her father following the wrestling match, Rosalind responds, "No, my child's father." Pretty risque, huh? Well, obviously too risque for 1936, as that line is amended to, "No, my father's child," which of course renders Celia's playful use of wrestling terms in her following speech pretty nonsensical at best. Olivier is one handsome dude, and Bergner is winning, even with her inexplicable German accent. And her Rosalind is certainly having a blast as being a man, and their scenes together are the best part of the film. Certainly better than the Jaques sections, which are pretty stiff. Seemingly, the filmmakers felt this as well, as much of his storyline is cut. At the end, the messenger who arrives to tell of Duke Frederick's conversion is not Jaques Du Bois, but rather just a knight, and the melancholy Jaques doesn't depart the camp. The epilogue begins stagey, but is surprisingly cinematic. Rosalind begins the speech, but then her image dissolves to that of her in her Ganymede costume, as he addresses the women in the audience, and then back to Rosalind when she addresses the men and closes the speech. All in all, not a bad production, just nothing to get too excited about. Check it out if you're a completist or want to check out a young and handsome Olivier. This 1936 version is available for streaming on Amazon and on many other video streaming sites. Now, in the late 70s, early 80s, the BBC produced all the plays as part of their Complete Works of Shakespeare series, and their As You Like It was in the inaugural season, 1978. Directed by Basil Coleman, it was notable for its use of location. Instead of being shot in a studio, this was shot at Glamis Castle in Scotland. And while that helps with the naturalism of the setting, it also poses some logistical, technical problems, but none that are too distracting. You know, the lighting is poor in some scenes, and for the most part, the sound mix is pretty muddy. But it was enough to end location shoots for the rest of the series. Now, as per the agreement with its financial backers, this entire series is set in the Elizabethan period and done very traditionally, and this film is no different. The costumes in the first act, in Frederick's court, are opulent and what you'd expect, but once we get to the Forest of Arden, none of that costuming becomes too obvious. In fact, for Rosalind Ganymede, it works to an advantage. When at court, Rosalind, played here by Helen Mirren, she has these, for lack of a better term, dome headphone things over her ears with her hair pulled back and up into the tall, conical caps. So when she gets to the woods and her short hair frames her face, she does look like a different person. It also helps that while Mirren is attractive, it's an almost masculine handsomeness in her features, not an overly feminine beauty. Mirren's Rosalind is theatrical. In the early scenes, when she talks of falling in love, she takes on a pose of an actor acting out love on a stage. So when she takes on the role of Ganymede, it's no surprise that she's enjoying that masquerade. Angerad Reese's Celia, on the other hand, is not the doormat we see in many productions. She's protective of her father, and her relationship with Rosalind is not pure idolatry, but it's one where she's more likely to comment on the proceedings. On the other hand, Brian Sterner as Orlando is physical and serviceable, if not outstanding. Richard Pascoe's Jacques, however, does stand out, and I'm not at all sure if that's a good thing. His melancholy man seems almost bipolar, and maybe that's what Shakespeare was going for centuries before that clinical diagnosis even existed. Overly excited when talking about the meeting of the clown, otherwise almost catatonic moroseness. His eyes sunken, baggy, hair disheveled. He is a man moreless. His Seven Ages speech begins with a swagger and decays with the ages. I'm not sure if that's effective, but it sure was interesting. There were other nice touches. Inclusion of all the songs, a violent Frederick chasing Oliver through the castle, a bawdry-slash-flirty Touchstone-Audrey romance, a fierce Phoebe, and some really nice chemistry between Orlando and Ganymede. It was nice. Nothing objectionable, and maybe that's the problem. It was good, not great. Again, nothing to get too excited about, but worth a watch, definitely. And you can find a grainy subtitled version of this on YouTube, as well as on both streaming and DVD on Amazon.com. In 1992, Christine Edzard filmed a modern dress version set in and around London. The homeless of the modern industrial wasteland were the denizens of the Forest of Arden. While it sounds like it might be interesting, and it might well be, I wouldn't know it from this. Stultifying. The production begins with Jacques' All the World's a Stage speech in an opulent room. Why? I haven't got a clue. When Orlando and Olivier have their confrontation, there's no laying on of hands, though they mention it. But I didn't realize that the two characters were being played, and played well, by the same actor, Andrew Tiernan. So I guess they couldn't have him interact with himself a la Tatiana Maslany in Orphan Black. But still, it felt off. Felt wrong. As did the non-display of the wrestling match. All we saw was the reaction of the spectators. Line readings here were either bored or melodramatic, as if the attempt was being made to make the audience melancholy. Not helping was the overemphasized music. This is not to say that it was all bad. Having Orlando's poetry being urban graffiti was brilliant, and Emma Croft's Rosalind was okay. Her Ganymede was much better, though. But it was mostly bad, without joy or comedy, or resolution. The last on-screen pre-credit line was Rosalind's revelation to Orlando, delivered with a playful punch to the arm. The Jacques exposition about Frederick comes as a confused voiceover during the credits, and there was no epilogue. And can anyone tell me why the lion who attacks the Du Bois boys is a black man? A black man! Really? So, not good, not enjoyable. This is the one to avoid. In 2006, Kenneth Branagh, who's got quite the Shakespearean film pedigree, Henry V, Much Ado, a full-length Hamlet, directed, but unlike those previous films, did not act in this version, which was released theatrically in Europe but ran only on HBO, who produced the film here in the States. Branagh set his version in samurai-era Japan, when there were European traders in the country, and he does make some really interesting choices. A dialogue-free pre-credit sequence shows us the usurpation of the dukedom, replete with a kabuki performance and a ninja attack. Frederick, with his black hair, is obviously younger than Duke Sr., a gray-bearded gentleman, but both played by Brian Blessed. In foreshadowing to Frederick's climactic meeting of the old religious man, we see Sr. meeting the same religious man as he flees into the Forest of Arden, as will his daughter Celia and Touchstone when they flee into the woods as well. As the added opening can attest, Branagh loves to edit and move around scenes and speeches, as well as add new scenes. And for the most part, it's very effective. We actually see Oliver's torching of Orlando's home, and the meeting of Touchstone and Jacques, Orlando finding Oliver, and, of course, Frederick's offstage conversion. Branagh's not afraid to get fancy with the camera, either. The first half of Orlando and Ganymede's first meeting is done in a single take, with a flowing camera following them as they walk through the countryside in an unbroken shot. It's very nice, and very good in showing the growing chemistry between the two. Now, speaking of the two, Bryce Dallas Howard is a solid and versatile Rosalind, though perhaps a little too effeminate as Ganymede. And David Oyelowo, for those who don't know him, check out the British spy series M5. He was great in that and this as well. Both Kevin Kline and Alfred Molina thrive in their melancholy and comic roles of Jacques and Touchstone, respectively. And Romola Garai makes the most of the thankless role of Celia, making it both slapsticky and heartfelt. And the epilogue is awesome. After the close of the film, we see Howard in Ganymede costume walking and speaking the epilogue to us, but something is amiss. We're seeing a car in the background, and then as she continues to walk, we see the trappings of a film set and a location shoot. It's really well done. It ends with her entering her trailer, closing the door behind her, with her name and character name taped to the door. Then we hear Branagh's distinctive voice say, "Cut!" And then credits. It's awesomely done and very reminiscent of how he handled the opening chorus in his first Shakespeare film, Henry V. And if all of this makes it sound like a great production, I'm afraid to say it isn't. It's good. Don't get me wrong. It's solid. But somehow in this case, the whole is somewhat less than the sum of its parts. The elements are all there and all great, but the enterprise as a whole doesn't seem to gel. Now, I'm not put off by the setting. You all know me by now. I love breaking free of the traditional museum piece trap. But I'm a little disappointed that there weren't more native characters. A few Japanese actors, maybe in the Du Bois roles, would have been nice. But here we're left with what appears to be Eurasians limited to playing country bumpkins. So, Branagh's version, it's worth a view. I just wish I had liked it more. And you can find it both on DVD and streaming on Amazon, and currently on HBO Go. And that leads us up to the film document of the 2009 production by Shakespeare's Globe. And folks, this is the keeper of the bunch. Filmed before a live audience in a replica of the Globe in London, you get to see the audience and their reaction, from the folks standing as the groundlings would have, to the folks sitting in the ring above. In a dialogueless prologue, we see the crowning of Duke Frederick, and then the play begins. At the Globe, the acting style is far more declamatory than what we're used to, but perfectly suited for at least this production. For example, Orlando's opening speech to Adam is delivered as much to the audience as it is to the old man. The opening confrontation between the Du Bois boys is both comic and brutal. With no scenery on that bare stage, the entrances and exits overlap and are crisp, keeping the play moving along. And between this, the larger-than-real-life physicality in spoken comedy, and the frequent breaking of the fourth wall, there is a sense of joy pulsating through this production. The language is clear and precise, and there is never any doubt that all of these actors know exactly what their lines mean and what their characters are saying. Not something I can always say about all of the characters in the other productions I've viewed. The performances are top-notch. Naomi Frederick's Rosalind is incredible, mercurial, and matched and balanced by Laura Rogers' Celia. Jack Lasky makes a smart Orlando, and the Jaques presented by Tim McMullen is funny, as he is so over-the-top melancholic. But the highlight of all of this may be Dominic Rowan's Touchstone, a comic, sarcastic, knowing, and at times a little too modern, but that modernity makes a great connection with the audience. There are too many great elements of this production to list, but I just want to say that the ending of this version, as directed by Thea Sherrick, is simply brilliant, allowing for the characters to be more intelligent and knowing than most productions allow. This is the one you want to search out. It's available only on DVD or on some library video on demand streaming collections, but you got to see this one. If you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries these past 2 weeks, you've missed out on subjects including Act 5, Play Acting and Changes for Real, Part 2, plus 4 Weddings and No Funeral. Villain. 2 Jaques. Marlowe. Songs. The Bill Shakespeare Project YouTube channel update. Shakespeare's Globe production of As You Like It. The Tour de Arden Cycle of Mistrust, Fortune, Nature, and Naturals, and Stage Directions Episode 1 via Dialogue. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page. Remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And of course, please join us again for our next podcast. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for July 27th, 2014. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.